You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software, like Jira, Confluence, and Trello, help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. No matter if you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software keeps everyone connected and moving together as one towards shared company goals. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
We're live, pal.
Hey, we're live, pal. Welcome, everyone, to another Wednesday episode of the A-Side Live Chat. My name is, of course, Jose Jones with MMAFighting.com. I am back in the United States after 5 weeks in Abu Dhabi. Well, I should say back in Arizona because I was also at the Colby Covington Tyron Woodley card, which seems like years ago. So I've basically been on the road for 6 straight weeks, but I'm back. I got my bookshelf. I spent way more money than I need to admit on comic books when I landed on my first day off. But we can talk about that if you want, but we don't have to. But joining me this week is, of course, my partner in crime, Alex Savas, who will be on the road this weekend at UFC Vegas for Anderson Silva's quote-unquote retirement show. I'm sure we'll talk about that. I'm sure she's excited to get out of California for a little bit. And on the ones and twos, Casey Lydon, who is also in California, who is looking more crystal clear than normal, though his background is blurred.
It's depth of focus, man. It gives it, you know, it looks cool. Look, I can change it up. Look.
I don't know what those were.
Oh, look at that. Look at that. Now I'm out of focus. Look at that. You can see my art in the background. See some exercise equipment that's not being used. See my Gravediggers poster. And look, there's me again, all focused.
Giving Luke Thomas a run for his money on best webcam. Anyway, you guys know the drill. You can ask whatever questions you want on Twitter, the website, the YouTube comments, Casey's monitoring, whatever. Let's get it done. I'm sure we're going to have a million questions. So right out of the gate, Casey, what's our first question?
Boop, boop, boop. Million questions. All right. Let's hit the most important one.
Is this where we ask questions? Yeah, why not? Jay Romero, Average Joe Art on Twitter wanted to know, is this where we ask questions? Yes, on Twitter, on the site, on the YouTube comments, by Carrier Pigeon. If you have my phone number, you can text me. If you have Casey's phone number, you can text him. Didn't Ed message you once?
We talk on Facebook Messenger.
eBay. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Facebook Messenger.
I'm all tangled up.
You can message us on Facebook, but the most direct route is probably on Twitter, or better yet, on the site.
If you want to, before the show starts, I would say hit us up on the site or Twitter. When the show starts, hit us up in the YouTube comments. I have, unless you guys see something cool and you want to send it to me, but I really don't have time to look at Twitter because I'm running the ones and twos. So, Jay Romero, I hope we answered your question. Man, which one do? All right, it's you want to talk about last week or this week? Where are we going first?
We could talk about whatever your heart desires.
All right, here we go.
From MMG2K20 on Twitter, everyone spoke about Justin's wrestling credentials being the best Khabib will ever face. However, that was the easiest time Khabib has had on the mat. If it was like knife through butter, did everyone overestimate Justin's ground game, or is Khabib just that good? So yes, to set the scene, if anyone lived under a rock or just discovered mixed martial arts and wants to tune into this for the first time, Khabib Nurmagomedov submitted Justin Gaethje to move his record to 29-0 and then retired. I don't think Khabib Nurmagomedov broke a sweat in the second round submission. On the flip side, Justin Gaethje was basically sprinting around the octagon until he got submitted, trying to keep Khabib off of him with his back and away from the fence, which of course Khabib Nurmagomedov uses to set up his takedowns. Justin had said the best path to victory is to keep the fight in the center of the octagon. Well, he tried, and it didn't necessarily work out because he got submitted, got put to sleep. He did tap a few times. Referee Jason Herzog didn't see it, but he got put to sleep by a triangle choke, if I'm not mistaken. So Casey, to answer this question, did we overestimate Justin's ground game, or is Khabib just that good?
You cannot put in all caps or make the font big enough when he says, is Khabib that good? The answer is that. That was that good. Justin's wrestling is superb. Is it the best ever in MMA? No, it's not, because the best ever was right across the cage from him. So there was better wrestling in that cage, and it was Khabib. Justin Gaethje's wrestling is phenomenal. And we thought maybe that would be the difference maker, that his wrestling defense will be enough to slow Khabib down and then Justin can really throw those bungalows. But that's not what we saw. We saw knife through butter.
Bungalows, huh?
Bungalows.
Is that what we're calling punches?
Call back to Rampage.
Justin's wrestling is obviously very good, to the point of he stuffed the first takedown. If you guys remember, and the whole narrative was if he could keep the fight standing, he would have a better shot at victory. But of course, the flip narrative was it's great to stop one takedown. Can he keep stopping the takedowns? But after that first takedown, Oscar Willis and I, who were sitting next to each other, just kind of looked at each other like, oh, is this going to be one of those kind of fights? And then it wasn't. It definitely wasn't. He got taken down in the end of the first round, landed some great kicks too, and some punches. Two judges actually gave Justin the first round, which I agree with. Watching it live,
he had Mel on him. Did you?
I agree at the very end.
And an armbar attempt.
I agree, but that was like the last 45 seconds of the round. There's 5 minutes in a round. Watching it live, I can see how. First of all, I didn't score the first round for Justin. I scored it for Khabib. But watching it live, Justin's punches were very loud, and he seemed to be doing the most damage. Since watching it through the broadcast, because as you know, when you're watching a fight live, you can't see necessarily all angles of the octagon. You can hear the angles, though. Everything Justin threw, you could hear. And you could hear him laughing, because Khabib would throw punches and Justin would like chuckle at him, because he would very easily dodge flying knees or punches or jabs and everything. So Justin seemed to be doing the most damage on his feet. After watching it, obviously Khabib was the more dominant one, but I see where they're coming from just from my point of view. But Alex, we'll talk about this. What did you make of Khabib's win over Justin Gaethje at UFC 254? You're muted.
There we go. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
I muted myself. it was an important fight, I think, to watch, because we've been talking about Tony versus Khabib for so long. And I think this fight kind of solidified in my mind that Tony versus Khabib would go the exact same way as what we saw this weekend. And so now I have, I think, less interest in seeing it. I also have less interest in seeing it just in general, because I feel like a whole different person than I was like back in March when this was allegedly supposed to be like getting the ball rolling on it. But yeah, I see it going the exact same way. I think Khabib really is just that good.
Yeah, he's the most dominant fighter I think I've ever seen, in terms of we know exactly what's going to happen and no one can stop him. He's lost maybe – now he's what, lost two rounds?
I don't think he's lost one round.
Maybe?
Some judges, of course, gave him a round, but I don't think he's legitimate. Has he lost a round on all three judges' scorecards yet?
I think once.
But
if you watched – you can go back and rewatch the pre-fight press comments on MMA Fighting's YouTube channel. Justin Gaethje has said Khabib has lost one round, and he doesn't even agree with that. So in Justin Gaethje's mind, no one has ever even handed Khabib one round. But I think there's been one very early into his UFC career. But I digress. Khabib Nurmagomedov is retired. Greatest lightweight who's ever done it. I wouldn't necessarily call him the greatest. Most dominant is another conversation. I don't know if I call him the greatest, but I know Casey's eyes bug out. But I guarantee you we're going to have a question about it later. We can talk about it then. We don't have to dwell on this.
Real quick. Your microphone is like a little overblown. Can you turn it down a little bit? Does it sound overblown to you, Alex?
Yeah,
it's just where it's peaking. Wow. You know, maybe turn it down just a bit.
Is that better?
That sounds
better.
Yeah. Now that you're hearing your broadcasting voice,
Well, now that I'm also like home and I have my microphone and I'm not, you know, I digress, though.
Yeah. But yeah, Habib's wrestling is that good.
Yeah, he's the greatest wrestler who I've ever seen inside the octagon. And he's the most dominant fighter I've ever seen in the octagon.
And was I wrong? Did Habib? I mean, Habib basically, I don't want to say he won the striking, but it was pretty even. It wasn't like there was nothing desperation about those takedowns or anything. It was like, oh,
definitely not. I just think it was Justin was on his horse for so much, like throughout the whole first round, that Habib was throwing a lot of punches, but he wasn't connecting with a lot. And Justin was slapping in those leg kicks and snapping Habib's head back once or twice. So I would say Habib threw more, but Justin Gaethje landed more. But it was a dead heat in my mind.
Well, on the statistically, I think they said Habib actually landed more. But I know I really think that from the live experience, what you said, how you felt Justin won, I think because Justin throws so dang hard. And there's no one in that arena, so everything that's blocked. If a kick is checked, you just hear that slap of skin. So even a block shot feels like it lands. So I totally get why a judge would feel that way.
You can also, like I said, like Habib threw his running knee. That is like a signature running knee. He completely missed. And Justin laughed. Like, you could hear Justin laugh at the miss. So, like, you could pick up all these things to the point where, like, sitting octagon side, I didn't have my computer because I was set up in the back the entire fight. And then everyone went out to watch the main event, obviously. So me, Oscar, and Farah Hanoun of MMA Junkie and UFC Abu Dhabi were all sitting next to each other. And we're not working yet because we have nothing to work on. So we actually got to watch the fight as, like, quote-unquote fans.
That's
so,
fine,
like,
yeah.
Trying to think of questions. And Oscar and I were just giving each other looks, and like Justin Gaethje would land a kick, and all of our bodies would just go like, we just like together because they were so loud that it hurt my legs listening to them. So it's definitely a unique experience. Though I will say there were a lot of people in that arena for that fight. There were so many people. It felt like an actual fight.
Did you notice when, as soon as Habib won, even before he kind of bent over and kind of cried and everything, he actually told all the people there to shut the hell up. like he goes, hey, chill, guys, chill, it's done. Like he goes, like he gave his fans like about 3 seconds, 3 or 4 seconds of screaming, and he was like, all right, everyone, let's bring it down. So,
some of those people weren't fans, and some of those people were journalists, all right, well, which was disappointing.
Yeah, whatever. My impression when Justin, because I saw that little chuckle he did when Justin when that flying knee kind of went by him. My impression, it wasn't Justin necessarily laughing at Habib like, oh, you didn't even hit me. I think it was Justin to me going, oh boy, like this, like I got to worry about this now. I got to worry about guys diving at my ankles and knees at my head. Like Jesus, man.
The knee was not close at all.
I know, but the threat, but just the fact that Habib's threatening that now, like, yeah.
It was the same knee he missed on Connor.
Yeah.
Remember, he slipped Connor through the knee, and then Connor kind of switched it, but then it was irrelevant because Habib is just Habib. Yeah. Anyway, we'll talk more about
it. God, I'm so like,
I will.
I'm so excited.
Going on this, I want to ask a question because someone, a co-host, former co-host, texted me, said, hey, pal, I heard texting questions is allowed now. This is Matt Wells, in Texas, former co-host of the A-side. So question, what's more impressive? Habib always dominating with wrestling, everyone knows his game plan and is still unstoppable, or John Jones often willing to go where his opponent is best with different approaches, largely still dominating? It's a very interesting question because, as we know, John Jones' whole thing is he'll beat you at your own game, or Habib, on the flip side, you know what's coming and you can't stop it. So Alex, I'll start with you because I'm sure Casey's going to have more thoughts on the matter. What is more impressive?
I think it's obvious. I think everybody knowing what Habib's going to do and still cannot stop it is way more impressive. I mean, I don't know how many more fights that this guy needs to do exactly what he did, and there's nothing anybody can do. That's way more impressive to me.
It is an interesting comparison. Casey, what is your answer? And then I'll give mine.
Oh, Habib, 10,000%. Habib. I mean, and the idea that John beats you at what you're best at, I don't think he did. I think he lost to Reyes. He didn't beat him. He lost to Reyes. I mean, What, you beat him in football? I don't know what you're talking about. Like,
I think the narrative of Jones beats you at what you're best at hasn't been a thing since the first Steve C fight.
Yeah,
because he beat Chael with wrestling. He beat DC with wrestling. He dirty boxed Glover. He was more than happy to stand with Shogun and Machida, tapped Rampage. So I think that at one point in time, that was true. I don't think we've seen that for a while.
Yeah, I think that's over with. Actually, someone I would – the whole beat you at what you're best at, I would actually go with – when I think of that comparison, I think of someone like Nick Diaz. We're like, oh, I'm facing Paul Daly, one of the most dangerous strikers. Yeah, I'll strike of you. You know, that's what I think of when I think of guys who are that crazy. But
Nick Diaz isn't going to fight.
But yeah, I don't think of John Jones that way. Like, oh, he'll beat you at what you're best at. I just think if he's like, okay, he's really good. That's about it.
I think there was a point in time where that was accurate. But I think that's just because he game planned so hard for an opponent that he just knew what they were going to do. And like he fought Glover Teixeira like face to face for 5 rounds. And that was Glover's whole thing.
But he also tore Yeah.
Yeah. So I think there was a point in time that was John Jones's MO, but that hasn't been a thing for a few years since his first DC fight. Anyway, let's ask what is our next question?
Next question. Oh, what's your opinion? You didn't give your answer to that.
Devil's advocate, I would say John Jones, but I think it both are very impressive. Like some of the performances that John Jones had blew me away. Like when he fought DC and took DC down and put his hand on his forehead, super disrespectful and unnecessary. It's still really impressive to take down a former Olympic wrestling captain and then basically have your way. So
yeah, remember that time John Jones out karateed Machida? No, he beat him.
I agree.
It's a fun story, but I don't think it's too much truth to it.
I'm impressed with both people's performances. Since I think John Jones' fighter IQ and his chin is one of the most underrated tools of his game. His ability to change on the fly, and I don't know how to. We'll talk about it more. But both are very impressive. I just think Khabib is the more dominant fighter.
Mm-hmm. Real quick, before we go to the next question, because I already know the questions, because we didn't get one this, but I think the most underrated part of Khabib is his toughness. The way he ate those leg kicks and never even showed any damage or any limp, that he ate a good 4 or 5 leg kicks. Like I was
on a broken foot.
On a broken foot, in which I have no reason to believe that they're BSing us. So,
and they put out x-rays and all that stuff on all the injuries he had. Had stabbed, possibly, too.
Dude, this is how awesome Khabib is. Khabib broke his foot so he could fight with a balloon foot just to show Conor you can still win a title with a balloon foot. That's how good Khabib is.
That's the narrative.
That's the narrative.
Next question. Thank you, MMG2K20.
Speaking of Conor.
Oh, great.
Yeah, here we go.
Longtime commenter. Everything about lightweight division. When will Dana announce Conor's next fight? When will Dana announce Conor the title? How would you match up Michael Chandler, Tony Ferguson, Justin Gaethje, and Charles Oliveira? I'm going to add Dan Hooker in there. Who should fight for the number one contender? What's next for Islam Makhachev? So I asked Dana White about Conor versus Poirier, and Dana White was not about it and walked out of the press conference, but someone had to ask it. That is the exact response I expect, because Dana White doesn't like talking about future fights. So Chandler, Ferguson, Gaethje, Charles Oliveira. I'm going to add Dan Hooker in there because he's in the top. I'm not going to add Felder because he's still technically retired. What's next for Islam Makhachev, we already know, is RDA in a 5-round fight in Las Vegas. Conor will supposedly fight end of January, I assume, for the title. And I assume that also because Javier Mendez has been on record. I think he told our friends over at Submission Radio. So shout out to them for an awesome interview that he thinks whoever fights for titles next should fight Dustin. That is his opinion. I'm not going to argue with Javier Mendez on that. And since Conor is already fighting Dustin Poirier, supposedly, just make for the title, I don't really care. I think that's a fine fight anyway. They're both coming off wins. It's a rematch. And then I think Chandler should fight Tony Ferguson. Justin Gaethje should fight Dan Hooker. Tony Ferguson. I mean, Charles Oliveira, I'm sorry. You're pretty much the odd man out, unfortunately.
You're Leon Edwards.
But Alex, what would you do for the lightweight division?
I had it almost similar. So if Conor Dustin's for the title, then I put Chandler Ferguson, obviously, for the number one contender. But then I had Oliveira fighting Hooker, just because I kind of feel like they're in the same boat where they're just kind of floating near the top. And I think one would really, I mean, one, that would be a huge, that would be a banger. And I feel like we're going to get a really amazing finish from that, really dominant performance, and then probably bump them up to probably fight the loser of Chandler and Ferguson.
Yeah.
And then Gaethje, I don't know.
I will say, and I don't know what they were talking about, but I saw Gaethje and Chandler around each other a lot after the fight, on the plane ride back home, in the airport, and they were chit-chatting, very friendly, very respectful. But if they're trying to book that fight, I'm not going to say no to Michael Chandler, Justin Gaethje. Also, let's not forget, Dana White says the Ultimate Fighter is coming back, and I think I would be hard-pressed not to assume some sort of combination of these two will coach. I wouldn't hate Michael Chandler and Tony Ferguson, mostly because Michael Chandler is already a fitness expert, as Dan Hooker calls him. Did you see Dan Hooker's subtweeting Michael Chandler all fight week, Casey?
No.
He keeps saying, he goes, if you weigh in and you're not fighting, you're just a fitness model and stuff like that. He wouldn't actually tag Chandler. And he'll say, oh, the fitness model on the screen again, not fighting and stuff like that.
Like, he wouldn't do the same thing. Shut up.
I think he's just trying to pick a fight. I don't think he has – I know he doesn't have anything against Chandler. He just wants that fight so badly and trying to drum up some sort of interest. So I would not hate Chandler coaching, because that means we get Henry Hooft and all those guys on screen, and I think that gym is awesome, and they're great coaches on the Ultimate Fighter. And then Tony Ferguson and his – Tony Ferguson workouts would just be awesome to watch on The Ultimate Fighter 2. But I know Case is going to say, let's just have him work out on screen for an hour. But if you need two coaches for The Ultimate Fighter, I wouldn't hate those two.
That's what Showtime did for their boxing workouts, open workouts. They just had live streams on the open workouts. But
all that.
Yeah, I like how you said Dana doesn't want to talk about future fights, but then like 5 minutes, not even 5 minutes before that, because he was only up there for like 5 minutes, he talked about, oh, let's do Whitaker Adesanya. So he had that fight in his head, but he didn't have the next fight.
I just think you have to be, and this is all, like, I don't know the answer, so I'm just speculating. I think Dana and Connor, and like with negotiations, you have to be very careful what you say. Because it might throw a wrench into negotiations. He might ask for certain things. If you say the wrong thing, Connor is so
involved. He might ask for money.
Yes. So you have to – it's a very delicate situation when it comes to like dealing with Connor McGregor in negotiations, that I just think as soon as someone brings it up, he's like, I'm out, because he just doesn't want to ruin negotiations. That's a speculative though, because he won't talk about him at all. But he'll talk about everyone else.
I just think – I didn't really realize, because I was so caught up in the Habib retiring and everything, that I didn't realize from my impression, like how just depressed and sad for the UFC's future bank account when they found out Habib was retiring. Considering even Mendez didn't even know that he was retiring. Imagine the shock that the UFC had, like, because Dana's doing all these big old, you know, multi-million dollar deals with these people in Abu Dhabi, and all of a sudden...
Like you have this big agreement with Abu Dhabi, and all of a sudden the guy that's going to be the man in that country retires.
Yeah.
I bet we see a lot more Islam Makhachev in the future. Umar made up too, all those guys.
Oh, but to answer the question, if we actually go by rankings, I'll do my own rankings. The next vacant title should without a doubt be between Dustin and Gaethje. Rematch, and those guys are 1 and 2 right now. I have most likely it would be Connor versus whoever is going to fight for the cheapest. To me, that's how the UFC works. If it is Connor, it should be Connor and Dustin. But ideally, I would like Dustin versus Gaethje. But in a perfect world, let's have an 8-man tournament, and let's actually find out who the best lightweight is, and not pick it by popularity or who's going to fight for less.
I agree, but Dana White hates tournaments for some odd reason.
Yep. All right, next question. Let's move on to next week, or this coming week.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, or whether your team is around the corner or on another continent altogether, Atlassian software is built to help keep you all on the same page from start to finish. That way, every one of your teams, from engineering and IT to marketing, HR and legal, can stay connected and move together as one towards shared company-wide goals. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
Anderson Silva from Zakuko Kegi. Is this the last time we see one of the best fighters in the game? What was your favorite moment of his career? Casey, I'll come to you second because you've seen a lot of his fights. Alex, you're gonna be there to potentially witness Anderson Silva's last fight. I don't think he's retiring. I know he has one more fight after this on his contract. I can't imagine he's gonna go out on a fight against Uriah Hall in front of nobody. So do you believe this is the last time we see Anderson Silva fight inside the octagon, who many consider to be the greatest middleweight of all time? I still consider him the greatest middleweight of all time. Or will we see him at one more time, maybe go somewhere else? And what is your favorite memory from the fighter's career?
This is a hard question for me because I feel like Anderson Silva's his reign was probably before I really got into MMA. So I actually kind of feel bad that I'm going to be there this weekend, and it probably means a lot less to me than it does to a lot of other people that are going to be there. But that being said, I've heard a lot of whispering about, you know, I don't think that this is going to be his last fight anyway. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't really have a favorite moment. I think it was all pre-MMA Alex.
Fair play. Casey, what is your favorite moment from the Spire's career, and is this the last time we see Anderson Silva fight inside the octagon?
Okay, first off, cool, Alex. You are a bad MMA fan because you shouldn't have said, oh, I've been watching Anderson since UFC 1. I saw him at UFC 1. So, like, you're a bad MMA fan. Sorry. Number one bullshit. That's how we do everything here. We just talk out of our ass.
Yeah.
say a random, I saw him fight. When is he fighting Conor McGregor?
Yeah.
Okay, guy.
Yeah.
I do want to see that fight still. favorite moment? Actually, you know what? My favorite moment is actually when I was working with Ariel back in the day, and it was for one of his UFC title fights, and it was during the media day, and Anderson grabbed Ariel, and they danced together.
Remember that. I don't remember what fight it was for. What was before?
I bet I can look up Anderson Silva. Oh, you know what, people at home, once we're done with this, go Google Anderson Silva dancing Ariel Helwani and watch him dance. It was beautiful. It was cute. But my favorite moment for me fighting-wise, was probably won't go down as one of his favorite best moments, but actually it was when I was in Brazil and I got to watch him knock out Stefan Bonner. and I was sitting cage side. It was one of those times, like you said, I didn't have my laptop. I had nothing to do. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to watch this as a fan. This is awesome. I'm not trying to keep score. I'm not hashtagging in Abu Dhabi, all that crap. You know, just watching fights. And watching a full arena, you know, do their little chant. And then that flying knee right to the sternum to Bonner. It was just awesome. So just seeing Anderson just school someone. And especially, I think that was juiced up. I think Bonner got popped too after that fight.
He did.
Yeah. So yeah, so loaded, PD loaded, Bonner just destroying him in Brazil. That was very fun.
That was the last time we ever saw Anderson, like the Anderson fight.
Okay.
Like the original. That was the last time we saw like the Anderson Silva. Because he still hadn't lost to Weidman yet. Mm-hmm. It was at light heavyweight. That was still undefeated light heavyweight Anderson Silva, which was a thing. Like, oh, Anderson Silva's never lost to light heavyweight mm-hmm. before until he fought Daniel Cormier. And then he lost to Weidman, like, 162. Mm-hmm. I think the Bonner fight was 153, so it was not soon after. And they showed that highlight on repeat over and over because 162 was International Fight Week, so they had the old style fan expo pre-Reebok mm-hmm. where the fans were actually felt like a big deal because they had all the booths. Like had like the Venom booth and the Ruka booth and the Tapa booth and had the fighters signing autographs and everything.
Head rush,
all that stuff.
Dethrone.
And they had the giant screen in the Mandalay Bay playing the Stephen Bonner Anderson Silva fight on repeat. Over and over and over and over and over. So I watched that fight maybe 1,000 times waiting for interviews. I also remember Venom would have like go-go dancers wearing Venom outfits dance for hours. And I felt so bad for those women because they would just be standing there dancing while people were in line to like meet Shogun or Vanderlei or someone like that. And I just felt so bad for them because music was blasting and they just had to nonstop dance. Anyway, my favorite Anderson Silva moment. Man, that's a good question. I vividly remember him knocking out Chris Lieben because I was so hyped on him coming over from like the Pride cage rage time to Chris Lieben. And everyone thought Chris Lieben was going to like be the guy that could just walk and march forward. And Anderson Silva just pieced him up in like 60 seconds. His Lee Murray fight was awesome because Lee Murray is a psychopath at Cage Warriors. I'm just going to talk, or Cage Rage, I should say. I'm just going to talk about pre-UFC Anderson Silva. Ryu Shonen fight getting tapped out, the Tony Franklin elbow where Anderson watched Ong Bak before and decided he was going to land that elbow. Man, pre-UFC Anderson was freaking awesome. Him dancing out to Michael Jackson. It was awesome, all that stuff.
Yeah, I wasn't really an MMA fan when Anderson fought Lieben, so I'm very curious to talk to some journalists who were like kind of in the game at that time. Like, what was the perception? Because I know that was a main event for a fight.
So my like, perception.
Was he coming over like Michael Chandler? Was he coming over like when Eddie Alvarez came over, like the biggest, you know, big free agent? Or was it just kind of like.
Not really, because he was 1-1 in his last few fights because he beat the fight before he had beat Tony Franklin with that elbow that everyone's seen 1,000 times. And the fight before that was his Okami loss at Rumble on the Rock.
Which was a DQ.
So he was like, which was a DQ. And before that, he had, I think, 2-3, and even going into that Okami fight, it was like a 2-3 fight win streak. I'm not 100%. And before that, he had just lost to Ryu Shonen. So he was like 4-2 in like his last 6 fights coming in. But you knew how good he was. He also fought in a couple welterweight fights or like catchweight fights where he was really small, or he was a really tall, skinny welterweight fighting like Carlos Newton and everything. And he also beat Jeremy Horn. Lee Murray was pre-psychopath Lee Murray, so he was still allowed to be in public and before he went to like Moroccan jail. So beating Lee Murray was a really big deal, mostly because he went to England to fight Lee Murray in his backyard. So it was one of those things where you knew how good he was, but his record going in wasn't reflective of how talented he was. And Lieben was still Chris Lieben, like, from coming off Tough from like 2005, 2006. I'd never seen Anderson fight live, so I didn't know how tall he was. And do you remember, I'm sure you guys have seen the tail of the tape for that fight. It said Anderson Silva was 5'11", which is so inaccurate. He's like 6'2", 6'3", and Chris Lieben is 5'11". So I'm like, oh, Anderson's a lot shorter than I expected. And then when they fought, that was a wrap. And as soon as he beat Chris Lieben, I'm like, sign, fight Rich Franklin. now. And that's exactly what happened. So,
well, clearly the Joe Silva, when they signed him, obviously thought that he was the next big thing. So, I mean, they want to give him a main event against such a showcase fight against Leben.
The Chris Leben fight, I thought, was going in. I'm like, remember what we were saying about Izzy? He's either going to get bulldozed or he's going to style on him. That is how I viewed Leben versus Anderson Silva. So basically, go ahead.
Oh, no. Sorry. I lost the comparison to Izzy. What do you mean with Izzy?
Remember before Izzy fought Romero?
Oh, before Romero. Okay. I thought you meant his debut. Sorry.
No. Izzy was going to be like, he's going to style on him or Yoel Romero's going to expose him. One of the two. There's no back and forth fight for this.
And we got neither.
Exactly. But that was the whole narrative going in, and I knew either Leben is going to be too tough or Anderson is just going to wrap a baseball bat around his head. It was one of the two. And that's exactly – we got the perfect game, Anderson Silva. Now, I was not under the impression that he was going to become Anderson Silva after that. I thought he would face – I thought Rich Franklin was going to be a tough fight.
Really?
I thought Mark Hart's of the world would be a tough fight. I thought Dan Henderson was going to be a super tough fight the first time. Because Dan was still champ of Pride coming in. So it was I did not think he would become the Anderson Silva that we know now, but I knew he was gonna be something special.
You know, I did forget my one very fond Anderson Silva memory is actually when he lost to Weidman the first time. I was backstage, I was actually shooting on the backstage by the medicals where they do their Fox interviews. So I'm in the tunnel watching the fight, which is great. It was a great vantage point. I think it was at Mandalay or MGM? Not sure.
But it was in Vegas. And the first fight was at MGM.
MGM.
Both of them were at MGM.
It was MGM. And maybe everyone felt this way at home too, but as soon as Anderson got knocked out, I was just so confused because I just thought, oh, this is crazy. Anderson Silva is faking getting knocked out. So bold. What a bold move by him. Man, to get knocked out just to fake Weidman out. That's really good. Because remember, I think how many times you have to watch that replay before you went, oh, man. Oh, no, Anderson did get knocked out. Like, it was just like, I remember
he got folded.
Because remember, because he was faking it, and then he didn't fake it. And I was just like, man, Anderson's such a good actor. Look, he's still they're carrying him out of the cage. This is amazing. Like, he's really sticking to it. I admire that man. So that's my Anderson Silva moment.
Anyway, Anderson's great. I still think he's the best middleweight ever. At one point in time, he was my favorite fighter on the planet. Anyway,
I have a story, real quick, Anderson Silva story. I want to share this because when I worked for Elite XC back in the day, we were in Hawaii, and Rafael Feijão was fighting. And if you know, remember Feijão, he was one of Anderson's main training partners. So Anderson was in his corner. Nick Diaz was also on that card. I think it was for the KJ Noon, one of the KJ Noon's fights. And we're out on the pool, in the hotel pool, and Anderson's out there, and Nick Diaz is around. And I'm just And Nick Diaz is just staring at Anderson, just like eyeing him up and down, like, and just going like, and just kind of doing his like little, you know, Stockton thing. And I was like, oh my God, Nick Diaz is going to fight Anderson Silva by the pool right now. And Anderson's just like, hello, hello. But Nick Diaz just like, just mean mug him the whole time. And I just like, oh, this is great. I love both these guys. MMA is awesome.
MMA is a silly and awesome sport. Thank you for the questions, Akuko Kegi. We talked a lot about Anderson Silva in that one.
Well, I think he deserves it.
I agree.
Oh, by the way, this is not his last fight. No. But no, it's fun to talk about.
The Seaside, are you going to dress up on Halloween night? ? Hashtag the A-side.
I should.
You better.
I haven't dressed up in probably 4 years, I would say.
I mean, you're going to be in a media tent on Halloween night.
I know. How embarrassing.
You should 100% dress up.
I don't know about that.
Casey, you dressing up?
I'm going to be watching the fights from home, so I don't know. I'll be sitting in my living room in a, I don't know, in a sexy nurse outfit, so not sure.
As you do?
Yeah.
You should go.
I'll dress as a sexy nurse.
Alex, you should dress up as Esther. Go as Esther to the media tent.
How does one dress up as Esther? Wear like a metal shirt?
Yeah,
no, wear a metal shirt
on the red bandana.
Red bandana, just get wasted. Yeah, you know,
tuck your shirt into your jeans and wear the white nursing shoes that maybe she was way ahead of the game on.
Maybe I'll go as Jose instead. That would be fun. Oh,
that's easy. I think
black.
Yeah, just go bird it out. I'm definitely dressing up. I think me and my girlfriend are going as Marco and Alana from Saga, but even though we're not going anywhere.
Nice. Very nerdy. Very nerdy.
Yeah, as you know. But, so yeah, we'll see.
I thought I was going to overshare a bit and share some of my previous Halloween costumes on the stream, but nah, I might just catch me on Twitter. Catch me on Twitter.
Ryan Bader is the champion of Halloween costumes in the MMA world. He goes all out to the point where he was telling the story where I think he had painted his whole body blue to be like a Smurf. Like he wore like no shirt and he had like the white pants and like he dyed his like facial hair white. And he was like going into Canada for a party and they like stopped him or something crazy like that. They're like, why are you dressed like this on the Canadian border? Anyway, from Sam Harris, 999. Jose, how did it feel to be one of the only people on the planet to be watching UFC live? Bizarre. Super bizarre. I'm not going to lie. Like I said earlier in the show, I went out to watch the main event sort of as a fan, but not like – I was still – work was in the back of my mind because you have to be ready to ask questions at the press conference. Even though there was no press conference with Khabib, you still have to be ready for whatever happens. Or Justin, too. I thought we were going to get both of them. We didn't get either of them, but – Oscar and I and Farrah sat down and we kind of like there were a lot of people in the flash forum because they invited some guests, like VIP guests. There was a lot. There was like an ESPN booth, a BT Sport booth. Michael Chandler was sitting there. Nelk Bull were there, whoever they are. The YouTube millennials were doing their thing over on the side. So it felt like a big fight. And it was very, very bizarre to be there in person, knowing that how many people wanted to be there. Oscar and I had that conversation right before the fight started because Oscar like held his hand up and his hand was like shaking because the fight was so also because we had been there for 5 weeks and we were like, oh, I can't wait to go home. I'm so tired of Fight Island, seeing the same people over and over and over. And then like the Khabib fight, as soon as we met up in the media room before the fight card even happened, we were like, man, I forgot how big of a deal this fight is going to be, and we were just so excited. But it was a very bizarre feeling, I'm not going to lie. Side note, being stuck on Fight Island for 5 weeks, the weirdest sensation getting home was seeing cars. Because we didn't see cars for 5.5 weeks. Because it was buses and golf carts. Like when we landed in Vegas and Oscar and I took a lift out of the airport, like seeing cars was a mind trip for us.
There were just very few cars. Oh, yeah.
There were no cars.
Because you're in a bubble. You're in a bubble. So
there were zero. The only vehicles on Fight Island were the big buses that would shuttle media or fighters or anyone back and forth or golf carts for security. There were no, like, we're going to drive somewhere. Like, nothing. There was no cars. You could walk down the street like I Am Legend style.
All right. Well, thank you for your question, Mr. Sam Harris, 999. One more for you, sir.
Question for Jose. Top three best worst moments from Fight Island, fight or not fight related. Worst was lose – everything broke. Everything broke. So update for everyone because so many people have been asking me. Landed in Vegas, went to get my car. There was the security guard had put a donut on my car. You can't drive back to Arizona on a donut. So I had to go get it patched up at a tire joint. Oscar Willis was going to give me a ride. Coincidentally enough, his tire had blown out while we were away too. So that was two tires we needed to fix. And then I finally got home. I'm back in Arizona. Lost all my SD cards. Finally got a SIM card for my phone so I can use my phone again off of Wi-Fi. Still have to go get new SD cards. My Xbox is still broken. Everything broke. So that was probably the worst. Everything was worst. I just think after week four, you've seen the same people for four weeks, that you just slowly start to lose your mind and you lose sense of time. And like, what day is it? What time is it? Like, I was trying to work with Alex, but she was 11 hours behind me. So like when I was working, she was dead asleep. And when she was working, I was dead asleep. So that was very difficult, but I think we made it work. And the best things were fights. Seeing fighters every day was very interesting because they were some, a lot of them weren't cutting weight because the corner men were there too. So we're all used to seeing fighters on fight week cutting weight and being like super vulnerable and dehydrated and miserable. But seeing like Eric Anders, Michael Chiesa, like DC, like a lot of fighters that were just there either commentating or cornering, because then you could actually have conversations with them, it was very, very, very interesting and fascinating. And of course, Laura and Megan Olivia, we're all really good friends with. So it was just a treat to see fighters, to see people not being surrounded by fans so much, because every time we try to talk to fighters on fight week, I think they get mobbed by fans and you kind of lose being able to talk to them. So being able to talk to fighters without being swarmed by people was very fun.
All right.
MMA fighting. Robert Whittaker looks spectacular over Jared Cannonier. However, do you really think people want to see the rematch between him and Izzy? Weird question. Izzy versus Jones should be next, right? Well, we're 100% going to start with Alex on this. Anyone in the world was more excited about Robert Whittaker's win over Jared Cannonier than Alex, outside of Robert Whittaker's immediate friends, families, and teammates. So, Alex... is Robert Whittaker versus Israel Adesanya part two, Electric Boogaloo, next?
I think it's next. It should be next if you're staying in the middleweight division. If Robert Whittaker decides to stay, you know, out until March or April, like he said, after Christmas, I don't doubt that Jones and Adesanya might happen before that. I feel like Adesanya is kind of a wild card where it's like, whatever people think he's going to do, he's going to just do the opposite just because it's funner that way, more fun that way. I don't know. But if anybody else fights Adesanya before Whittaker for the title, I'm not going to be happy about that.
It should be Robert Whittaker, 100%. I think Robert Whittaker has done more than he styled on Cannonier, broke his arm, and then that Darren Till fight I enjoyed watching. And there's no question he won that fight. Now, the only scenarios I can see if Robert Whittaker doesn't get the rematch, because Israel Adesanya was on record saying, like, if they want me to fight Robert again, he will, because he already beat him. But you know Izzy wants new challenges. If Darren Till beats Jack Hermanson impressively, I can almost guarantee the UFC will try to book that fight, because Izzy wants to fight Darren Till badly. Darren Till is much more willing to engage in promotion and like fight buildup and trash talking and social media and everything. And as you know, Alex, Robert Whittaker is about as clean cut as you can get when it comes to fighting.
The point I like to use the word unproblematic.
That was the word you used on Twitter. Well, you can ask the question. He's like, mate, I don't know. I don't watch MMA. I don't care what people do. I'm just my own guy. So, definitely wants to fight after December. Or if he fights Jan, if they fight first him versus Jan Blachowicz, and then Izzy then fights John International Fight Week 2021, because he's on record numerous times saying that's when the fight will happen. But if we are going off of who deserves the fight at middleweight, it's 100% Robert Whittaker. I just have a hard time seeing that fight happening again now, simply because we saw how the first fight went.
Yeah, but that was a different Whittaker.
I agree.
That was 100%. Way different.
100% agree. It's a different Robert Whittaker we saw. He's in a better place. He's 100% deserves the fight. He's the number one contender, middleweight. Just don't know if that fight happens. Casey, what do you think?
Well, I think that how the first fight went is pretty irrelevant, because we've seen enough MMA to know that you fight last week doesn't mean how you're going to fight next week. So, I mean, if we go by that, we would never seen the trilogy between DC and Stipe. But Whittaker does deserve it, but I only think that fight happens next if the UFC can restrictions get released in either New Zealand or Australia, so they can actually have a live crowd. And I know New Zealand is doing phenomenal in their handling of the pandemic. Like, whatever the US is doing, they're doing the opposite in the better way in New Zealand. So I could see them actually, because they've had live crowds in New Zealand. So if they do Izzy versus Whittaker 2 in New Zealand, full house, packed up full of New Zealand and Australian fighters, you have a pay-per-view right there. Throw in Volkanovski as the co-main against whoever, you can do that in New Zealand. Obviously, the UFC staff and all the fighters have to quarantine 2 weeks. It's going to be a major pain in the ass, but everyone's making money, so whatever. But I think we're also forgetting about why is everyone sleeping in Hermanson here? Like, if Hermanson... heel hooks till
he's gonna wait till your answer to go off of that.
Yeah, I think because he has because what Whitaker, I'm sorry, Izzy fought like fight of the year versus Gastelum, and then freaking Hermanson like finishes that fight in 15 seconds or something like that, a heel hook. And I think if Hermanson can smoke Till, which I think is unlikely, but hey, who knows? I didn't think he was gonna beat Gastelum. Then we have a different look. We have someone like, oh, can someone submit Izzy? We don't know. So I think there's a good angle on that. I don't think Hermanson has the name, unfortunately. But, yeah. And Izzy versus Jones, should it be next fight? Absolutely not.
I agree. I do want to see that 2020 international fight of 2021, though. Don't care what weight class it's at. I just want to see that fight. And I think Jack Hermanson might be the only one that's more, like, clean, cookie-cutter, unproblematic. He's the only fighter more unproblematic than Robert Whittaker. Because he's just always smiling. And he's the Joker. That's his nickname. But he's just always happy and always positive, which is great. You love to see it. Robert Whittaker just seems kind of indifferent to everything in the world.
Somebody said he sounded like he was drunk at the post press, which he kind of did. He was just like,
I love Whittaker's personality. I love
Robert. Yeah.
It's his fight versus Israel Adesanya was one of the, we've talked about it before, where it's like you are a big fan of both fighters, that it's like difficult. It was difficult. I didn't pick, obviously, because I don't want to. I was watching unbiasedly, but I was like, man, I would just feel bummed for either fighter losing this fight for their careers.
But for the record, Izzy's gonna beat all of them.
Savas, dude.
There's a new Whitaker, but I feel like there's also a new Adesanya. Adesanya's the kind of fighter who likes to parade around as unproblematic, and in fact becomes very problematic. He's like the biggest anti-bully, and that's my hot take.
I think Israel Adesanya's anti-bully persona is you're a bully, and now I'm gonna he's gonna be such a bully to the bullies where it just gets, I'm like, dude, calm down.
Yes.
Like, you killed him. He's done. You beat him. Move on.
Yes.
Oh no, that's
fine. Do it for a few days, but to do it like 2 weeks after, I'm like, bro, move on. You beat him.
This isn't for us. This is a direct attack to that gentleman all the way in Brazil, constantly.
Attack all you want, but like, don't tell yourself that you're an anti-bully, because you're not.
No, he is. He is anti-bully. Did he do that to Whitaker? Did he do that to anyone else? No, he is beating up that bully.
By bullying.
Yeah, that's what you do. Isn't the whole anti-bully thing you beat the crap out of the bully?
Like, yeah, but then you beat the crap out of the bully, and then you move on and fight someone else. Let Paulo Costa fight someone else.
Right.
Like, you're done.
Hey, man.
Also, Paulo Costa, for a while, Paulo Costa was like, sign the contract. I'm like, what contract? There's no contract. We saw it. Move on. Go. Izzy can fight someone else. Paulo Costa can fight someone. I just got over it. Like, I just got, like, after, like, a few days, I'm like, I get it. He was, like, Paulo Costa was saying a lot of awful things, a lot of terrible things, and then you beat him. 48 hours, have at him, and then move on.
I like 48 hours of bullying, then we move on. Like, that's the rule. Everyone knows you only get 2 full days to bully people. We know that. Come on. It's going to roll. Everyone knows this. 2 days.
Casey, since you're the bully, you've never been on the other side, so.
It's going to happen. It happens to all of us. We all become the nail one day.
We all become the nail. Thank you, Tracy Gordette.
All right, this is a big one. Are you ready? Are you ready, Jose? You ready? You prepared?
Shoot, partner.
Here we go.
This is a great question, though.
From John Mulligan on Twitter. What would the equivalent robbery in MMA be of Mookie Betts being given to the Dodgers? First of all, I hear the Dodgers won the World Series. I haven't watched baseball since the Red Sox got eliminated. So, allegedly, the Dodgers won the World Series. So, congrats to Mookie. I'm happy he won, because that makes John Henry, our owner, look like a fool that he is. Also, shout out to John Mulligan, this commenter, using the phrase given rather than traded, because that's 100% what we did. Anyway, UFC to Bellator. What would be the equivalent of giving the I'll say second best player on planet Earth, because Mike Trout is the best baseball player in the world. Might be the best baseball player who ever lived. So what would the equivalent of being the second best MMA fighter in the world to another?
Chris Cyborg comes to mind.
That's not bad.
Chris Cyborg is up there for sure. Because Chris Cyborg only left the UFC because of her and Dana's beef or whatever. So, yeah, there was no – it wasn't a business decision. It was just like, I don't like you, so you can't fight here.
And Mookie Betts giving to the Dodgers is 100% just business, which was not just absolute nonsense. Anyway.
I don't think there's really – sorry.
The UFC losing DJ, I think, sucks just because we didn't get to see the rubber match with Cejudo. But DJ was happy about it. We got Askren, which – doesn't have the best record in the UFC, but drummed up a lot of interest in his fights. Basically, as Askren says, like, Jorge Masvidal needs to thank me for putting my face in front of his knee.
Exactly.
Which I fantastic. I think losing Musasi was a bummer just because there's a lot of matchups you won't see. I'm not sad that he went to Bellator because, like, we got to see, like, Himmler versus Lovato was a fight that I didn't know I wanted until it happened. Like, the rematch between Machida. We're getting Musasi Lima this weekend, which is just, like, Oscar and I were talking. He's like, there's a Bellator fight in this car. And Oscar's like, oh, man, like, do I want to watch that? And I'm like, it's Lima Musasi. And he's like, oh, yeah, that's, like, the one. Watch. So, yeah, losing Musasi just sucks because, like, him versus Izzy, him versus Romero, him versus Hermanson, like, all those guys, Till would just be so fun to watch that we're not going to get. But, yeah, there's a lot of great equivalents. But, you know, Mookie Betts is no more. He's still won.
Izzy versus Musasi as, I think, the one middleweight fight I'm never going to see, most likely. And I'm really bummed because I am a giant Musasi fan. I think Izzy's on his way to becoming the greatest middleweight ever. So I just want to see that fight. I'm so excited about this Thursday. There's
so many fights that, like, Musasi Whitaker is awesome. Like, we talked about Whitaker being indifferent. Musasi's existence is his whole persona is indifference. And then you talk to him and he's hilarious. He's absolutely hilarious. He's like Whitaker. He is like Whitaker, where they come off as so indifferent. But then when you talk to them and you get to know them, they're so funny. So it's a bummer we won't get that fight, the Hermanson fight, the Till fight. Musasi versus Anderson would be an awesome fight for Anderson's retirement party. I guess technically we could still get that if Anderson wants to hop over to Bellator. Imagine, oh my God, imagine if Anderson and Musasi fought on a Ryzen New Year's Eve show. Oh my God! In a ring,
That needs to be
injected into my body.
Anderson's real retirement fight needs to be on a New Year's Eve show in Japan. So he gets the big walkout. He can come out, do his big dance, do whatever he wants to do now. And having Anderson's retirement fight in the Apex with zero fans just feels
anticlimactic.
Anticlimactic. Yeah.
No press conference either, which is a bummer. Anyway, thank you for listening, John Malkin, and thank you for using the phrase "given." Shout out to Mookie Betts, our Lord and Savior.
Okay, this next question is pretty loaded, but we're going to do it.
From Tan Gwen on Twitter: how badly did Leon Edwards torpedo his career? So, for those of you who aren't aware, Leon Edwards, what's he ranked? 3, 4?
Unranked.
He's back.
Three. Yeah. Back.
An unbelievable comeback. The guy goes unranked to number 3 in a matter of hours. How does he do it? This guy didn't torpedo his career. He just made the greatest jump ever in the rankings and not even fought. It's amazing. This Mr. Tan Nguyen, you are crazy.
Very reminiscent of Nate Diaz did this once where he went from unranked to ranked in like a matter of 30 minutes. But Leon Edwards is top 5 welterweight in the world and is fighting Khamzat Chimaev, unranked challenger, who has just been on a tear through the UFC lately. 3-0 in the span of like a month and a half, which is super impressive.
In the span of like 30 seconds fight time, too.
Yeah, for real. Like, he has to combine one round of fighting or something like that. I will say Leon Edwards is the first legitimate welterweight he'll ever fight in the UFC, because he's fought in 2 middleweights, a lightweight that went up, and now he's fighting a like, this is a massive step up in competition. Like, it's a, it, I can't stress how big of a step up in competition this is for Khamzat Chimaev, going from Gerald Meerschaert, middleweight, who has like 15 career losses. Very good fighter, but Leon Edwards is incredible fighter. Alex, did Leon torpedo his career right here?
Yes and no, because if Leon beats Khamzat, there's going to be a lot of eyes on him that aren't already on him. I think the only reason the eyes were on him in the beginning is because he was complaining about not being able to get a fight, so people were paying attention. But if he pulls this off, there will be a lot of people watching of, you know, the guy who derailed the hype train. And it's a big win for him, but at the same time, it's also a huge risk for him as well, because I don't think people, maybe casual fans, don't realize as much that Khamzat is not, he hasn't been around that long, and he's not exactly, you know, top ranked. So it's a big risk for him, but I think he torpedoed his career worse for like his position with Dana White. You got to be careful with the things that you're saying.
What did he say?
No, I just mean like when you complain too much about, you know, and allegedly turning down fights, and just, you got to be more of a company man than that.
Ooh,
unfortunately.
They got Alex Savas, pro Dana White. Do what Dana says. Do what Dana says. That's what that's all I hear. I'm joking.
God, now that, yeah, Alex Savas is a Dana White fan.
I didn't say it. You just said it. We already clipped that. Now it's already out on Instagram.
Anyway, Casey, did Leon Edwards torpedo his career?
I think Jorge Masvidal torpedoed Edwards' career, to be honest. I think ever since then, we've seen Leon Edwards in a different light, and it sucks for him. Because he's never been that guy on the mic talking crap, you know. He's just not that guy, which is good. I don't want him to be someone he's not. But I don't think we know if he torpedoes his career until after this fight. If he loses, oh, hell yeah, he torpedoed his career. Then it's just going to be a bad look. If he wins and he really controls that narrative and says, no, it says like, now give me the champ. You know, it's like, all right, Dana, I did what you did. You know, I did what you wanted, Dana. I fought that, because clearly Dana wanted this fight, because otherwise it'll be Chimaev versus Neil Magny. Because like Dana's like, raise your hand if you want to fight him. Neil Magny's like, pick me. Dana's like, I don't see anyone yet. All right, I guess we're doing Edwards. You know,
that was an even goal here.
Yeah. So I think the jury's still out as far as torpedoing his career. And I think this is a horrible fight for Leon Edwards. But somehow if he can steamroll Chimaev, he can flip it around and turn it to his advantage. But there's a lot needs to be done.
I think whoever wins this fight is going to get a title shot. 100%.
I can see that.
Whether it's if Gilbert Burns is still the guy to fight Usman and the winner waits, so be it. Or if Khamzat beats Leon Edwards and is still just like, I want to keep fighting, I'm not waiting, and then he gets the Darren Till fight that Darren Till said he would take. Because let's not forget, Darren Till said, if I get through Jack, I'll fight you next. And they started to like Instagram and tweet at each other and all that stuff. So Khamzat Chimaev just might be a psychopath and might knock out two top five contenders in two different weight classes before he even gets a title shot. He's the guy to do it, I think. But I don't think Leon Edwards, quote unquote, steamrolls Khamzat. I could very easily see him just boxing him up for five rounds, as Leon Edwards is.
Wow, that guy means business.
Just an amazing player.
No, not him. The sports photographer behind him.
What?
He has a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where he earns 5% annual percentage yield. So he's scoring big on and off the field. You might even say he's the MVB.
MVB?
The most valuable business.
Making your money work harder. That's how you business differently. Intuit QuickBooks. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
There are a lot of questions around what you eat. How is it made? Where does it come from? What are the impacts of its packaging? The What You're Eating podcast is here to help you understand how your food gets to your plate and put into context the full impact of the food you eat, whether that's on animals, the planet, or other people. Join host Jerusha Klemperer, director of Foodprint, as she dives deeper to uncover the problems with the industrial food system and offer examples of more sustainable practices. She provides practical advice for how you can help support a better ecosystem through the food that you buy and the systemic changes you push for. From practical conversations with farmers and chefs to discussions with policy experts on the barriers to sustainability, the What You're Eating podcast covers more than just the what. It covers everything from the why to the how of the food you love to eat. Listen and subscribe to What You're Eating at foodprint.org/whatyoureeating or wherever you get your podcasts.
A great fighter, let's not forget. What does he call him? Left elbow Larry is what he calls him. Calls himself after Bisping calls himself left hook Larry. So we just haven't seen him in more than a year. I feel real bad he didn't get the Tyron Woodley fight, especially after that BT Sport promo package they did before fighting in London and all that stuff.
Roll that back.
Whoever wins will get a title shot against the winner of Usman and Burns. And I wouldn't put it past Khamzat to become the number one contender in two weight classes before he gets a title shot.
Oh, my.
It's great. We just haven't seen him fight a top. We haven't seen him fight anyone ranked, and he's all of a sudden fighting the number three ranked welterweight in the world.
This is right. Okay. I asked this question on Twitter, and I couldn't. The best answer, not taking into account short notice, Cub Swanson versus Arm Lobov is the last time we had a top five division fighter coming off a win fighting someone way, way unranked. And that was Cub Swanson after his fight of the year versus Superboy versus Artem Lobov. So it's a weird fight.
Super.
That's his name, right? Superboy? Yeah,
the Korean Superboy. One of the best fights I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. He's Superboy to me. I don't need labels. I don't need nationality. He's my Superboy.
Oh, okay.
You know what? But now this question rolls right into this question.
From Michael Jones on Twitter. Are you on the UFC's make-believe media panel that determines ranks? No, none of us are. No one at MMA Fighting is on the UFC ranking panel.
It's on the website. I don't know if people know. If you go to the UFC.com/rankings, all the way at the bottom, and see how a ranking's determined. Click that. It tells you exactly all the outlets that people come from.
Have you ever been on it, Casey?
The ranking site?
The rankings panel.
No, not at all. I am very against that. At the beginning, I kind of liked it. I was like, oh, cool. But then I think we all discovered very quickly, the UFC just uses this in negotiating against their own fighters. It's like they'll use rankings when they want to. Yeah.
Outside of the goofiness, like Conor still being ranked a lightweight after like not fighting in a long time and then losing, and outside of like the weird, like every now and then, like when a fighter gets a fight booked, all of a sudden they mysteriously move up a spot. I don't have a huge issue with a lot of how the rankings are laid out, outside of like the weirdness that the UFC does with moving fighters up and down one or two spots first.
But the weirdness is the issue. That's the issue.
No, that's what I'm saying. I have an issue with the weirdness, but in terms of how the fighters are actually. I don't have any problem with Robert Whittaker being number one middleweight, Paulo Costa being number two, like Darren Till being whatever it is. Like, I don't have Lauren Murphy, I get when she went off on that long tangent at the press conference, like, how am I ranked number five? Like, I'm like, you make a very valid point.
And she didn't move up, right? She's still number five.
As far as I haven't looked.
She being an unranked person came on short notice, and she's probably a girl that's probably actually a strawweight. So I wouldn't move her up the rankings. So
I think she might move up by proxy just because like Callum Chookagian lost to an unranked flyweight. So maybe she just fell past Lauren. I wouldn't say Lauren moved up. I just maybe feel someone fell below her, if that makes sense.
But calling Andrade unranked flyweight is like, that's just weird.
It's like calling Khamzat Chimaev an unranked welterweight.
Oh, I agree he is unranked. But Andrade is not unranked.
I agree. But like Jennifer Maia being like missing weight and still being ranked above Lauren Murphy and all that kind of stuff. I get Lauren Murphy's arguments. Like, if anything, people losing and falling would move her up. Mm-hmm. Just by proxy, not that she powers her way.
But Maia didn't lose weight when she submitted JoJo Calderwood.
Nope.
So
I agree.
So how far back are we kind of? I get what Lauren's trying to say. I just don't buy any of her arguments. But
she has an argument, I think, for being ranked five. She's beating Andrew Lee.
That's the thing about rankings. Rankings are we don't. It's not the judge's decision. It's like who we think's the better fighter, and we all. I mean, we don't need to go back on her, dissect all of her fights, but if you think Fighter A beat Fighter B, but then the judges gave it to Fighter B, I still rank Fighter A above Fighter B.
Oh, I just go off of what's on paper, wins and losses. I don't care if I think you lost or won.
But rankings are head to head, though.
Right, but it's also a very subjective thing. We have completely different things. And I get in 2020 being subjective just means you are infallible and everyone's opinion is fact. It's just not the reality, of course. I base it off of wins and losses. I think Andrew Lee beat Lauren Murphy, but at the end of the day, she has a W. And Lauren Murphy's got a W, so that's how I take it. Fact. Like, if Jon Jones theoretically could have lost three in a row. If Anthony Smith took the DQ, loses to Tiago Santos, loses to Dominic Reyes, I'm not going to rank Jon Jones lower than one at light heavyweight, even though he could be on a three-fight losing streak. I'm not going to rank him. I still would put him number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world over Khabib. I get Khabib's number one. I don't have any problem with that. But me personally, I would still put Jon Jones number one because he's beating people on his worst days, which is a whole other argument to begin with. It's just all subjective. It is a completely subjective narrative. End of rant.
Don't block us again, Lauren Murphy.
I'm still blocked. I didn't. She, if you watch, because I didn't want it to become weird for media people and ruin press conferences. Like I told some of the media, I'm like, I don't think Lauren's going to want to take questions from me. So like I gave some of the people a heads up, like you should ask more questions because I'm not going to be able to ask many questions because I don't want to ruin the vibe or make her walk out or something like that. And someone asked her about the Ultimate Fighter, and she was like, stopped asking about the Ultimate Fighter. She looked right at me, and I wasn't even the one asking the question. And I was like, I get it. Like, you have an issue with your appearance on the A side. I wish that wasn't the case, but it is what it is. But I made sure not to ask any questions because I didn't want to ruin the flow of a press conference. Because on media day, she was great. Her part when she was talking about her son and how her son seeing her in the video game being a really big deal is a very sweet moment. She was like tearing up and stuff. And I didn't want to ruin the vibe if she had a problem with me. She might not even remember that I was – she might not even know me as the host of the A-side. I just didn't want to take that chance.
I think she just came out guns a-blazing at everyone in the media like, why – you guys have a lot of explaining to do. And it's like nobody here has anything to do with that.
She did great. That's how you do – that's how you make a case. That's how you make a case. You just fucking just rip everyone's asses apart. Just going, man. That's what she was doing.
We're talking about her and we're still talking about it. I get it. I just – if she looked at everyone in the press conference, she would see, oh, none of you people are on the UFC panel board. So you have anything to do with where I'm ranked.
Yeah. Lauren Murphy versus Jessica Andrade. Just book that fight. There. Then you will make your damn case. You beat Jessica Andrade, the woman that just smoked Caitlin Chagayan. That it will be undeniable. Undeniable.
Or Cynthia or Andrade. I'm fine with either. Or just stay ready in case someone pulls out. Like if Jennifer Maia misses weight against Valentina, bam, you're right there.
That's actually a good option. Yeah, she should be campaigning to be a backup fighter, I guess. Maybe, I don't know.
Just Dodge and Murphy. And to Lauren Murphy's credit, she's like, I am a realist, and if they want to give the title shot to Andrade over me, she deserves it for smoking Callum Chukagian. So she's like, if they want to give the next one to Andrade, fine, I'll fight Cynthia, but if they don't want to wait, I'll fight Andrade and just stake my claim. Like, Lauren Murphy was also very realistic in her, like, for all the stuff, like, why am I ranked five, why am I five? She made a lot of good points where she, if they gave Andrade a title shot, she would 100% understand, but she still wants to fight.
So who's in front of Murphy in the rankings? In the UFC rankings?
Let me pull it up.
I have it up here. So, Shevchenko, Andrade, Chukagian, Maia, Cavillo, and Murphy.
You have Cavillo in front of her, and then...
Maia.
Where's Andrade? Oh, sorry, you said Andrade, right?
Andrade is number one.
Number one? Okay. The problem is I don't know where to put her in front of anyone.
Maybe Cynthia? Because Lauren Murphy's...
Maybe Cynthia. She's four. And I mean, okay, but she's still in the same spot. I mean, Maia took a short notice fight. Maia took, JoJo Calderwood took a big chance facing, Maia on short notice. Wait, who was that? Did JoJo take that fight short notice, or did Maya take that fight short notice?
Neither one. They both just, they announced it very
One that was pandemic, just fight now type things. Okay.
They both knew that was happening, but it took a while for them to officially announce it. Yeah, so they were both, it was one of those, neither one was a short notice replacement. They just wanted to fight.
The fight so itself was short notice. Yeah, I gotcha.
Maybe just swapped Lauren and Cynthia. That might be the only one.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. Like, she's complaining about the rankings, like, but it's like, okay, I don't know.
Maybe Maya, because Maya might get, because JoJo's 7 and Maya's 3.
You gotta look at dominance of victory. I mean, Maya just beat JoJo, a round, took no damage, took her down, submitted her. No, Maya, known as a stand-up fighter.
Jessica I was like the number one fighter at flyweight, and Cynthia just beat her 5 rounds, not dominantly. She's 1-0 in the division, and she's ranked above. So that would be the only one I was flop, if you're going by that logic. So dominance of victory.
That means
anyway.
Go, Laura Murphy. Make your case. I love it. Get your name out there. That's good. Don't stop.
11:15. How many questions? We got any more questions, Casey?
You know what? Let me look at the YouTube real quick. Talk amongst yourselves.
Alex, who do you think is the number one pound for pound fighter in the world? Since that seems to be a big argument right now.
Oh, we're gonna talk about that.
I put Khabib. I'm one of those people who gets rid of anybody who's been accused of PED use. I just think it takes you out of the running. Sorry.
We're talking greatness or pound for pound?
You said pound for pound.
Is it pound for pound?
I would still put John Jones number one pound for pound fighter. I think Khabib is greater, if that makes sense.
See, I'm the other way. I mean, I definitely have Khabib pound for pound. I think that to me is that's easy as far as greatness. I'll actually put John above it. But what are we talking about? What do we rank him great? Like, I don't know. It's just a weird.
But doesn't greatness encompass you as a person?
Yeah. That's why I always said Khabib is the greatest. We're not going to argue about this at all because it's a ridiculous conversation, but I think LeBron James is a more talented basketball player than Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan is still the greatest player of all time. That's how I view it. Like, John Jones is the most skilled fighter maybe outside of GSP I've ever seen. I still think Khabib is the greater fighter. I still put GSP as the greatest fighter of all time, if we're talking about that. Two belts, avenged both losses. Like, we're talking about, like, look at the reaction to Khabib retiring and becoming number one. GSP's like, good job, man. Like, you're the man. Like, go out on top. And John Jones is like, I'm number one. Everyone look at me. So it's just two completely different perspectives. So I still think GSP is the greatest. I don't have a problem putting Khabib 2, John 3. I still put John Jones pound for pound best right now in terms of what happens inside the octagon.
John Jones is a much better prize fighter. Khabib, the prize fighter, I think John Jones has done very well for himself. Khabib is a greater fighter and definitely a pound for pound one.
I think there is a legit argument that Khabib is a better prize fighter. The amount of interest that he generates in a fight.
But look how long it took for Khabib to do that. How many times he had to win? John Jones has been one of the best prize fighters for years. Like, within maybe his fourth or fifth fight in the UFC, we were like, holy shit. It took Khabib, at least 6-7 fights in the UFC before we were like, hey, you know what, maybe we should move him to the main card.
That sounds like a problem with light heavyweight and lightweight. Lightweight is just way more of a hill to climb. Also,
fuck yeah.
You said Khabib was the Floyd Mayweather of MMA. Floyd Mayweather is the biggest prize fighter ever in combat sports.
No, I'm talking about just fighting style, like what you in the sense that you know what you're getting, and you're just waiting. Like price, like Floyd's a different level in terms of everything.
I think Khabib, there's a legit argument that Khabib is a bigger prize fighter based on outside of the United States interest. I guarantee you more, like Cristiano Ronaldo.
No.
Stories on Khabib.
Khabib has been only a great prize fighter for the last 2 years or so.
Yeah.
John Jones has been a pay-per-view main eventer for what, 7-8 years? That's I'm going longevity right there.
There is an argument that at their peak, Khabib drums up more interest than John Jones. And that's what I'm basing it off of.
Because he is the pound for pound best. But that's what I mean. Like, so at this, if you take like, yeah, the sliver in time right now, yeah, he's the bigger fight. He's the bigger prize fighter. I'm talking about over their careers.
Sure. That's what I'm saying, though.
Like, and if you go over their careers, that's why I think Khabib will always be a pound for pound better fighter than GSP. Because Khabib never, ever had an off night, which is insane.
And then that goes into the argument of can you, like GSP versus Condit was so impressive to me because he got rocked bad and looked like he was about to lose and still won. So you very well could have lost and came out from the depths of hell to win. Like I put a lot of stake into that.
So but you're holding against Khabib that he didn't get kicked in the head.
Yeah.
I will go with the guy not getting kicked in the head. Over the guy who got kicked in the head.
I will say, though, losing your dad right before your fight is way bigger of a mountain to climb over. So I will, like, but again, we're arguing who's 1, 2, or 3. Like, they're still top three. What's the problem here?
I think I would suggest everyone go to Bloody Elbow and read Jordan Breen's article. I don't know if you got a chance to read it, Jose. Jordan Breen wrote an article about Khabib, and it's very good. And basically, he came down to the thesis was deciding who's the pound for pound best is like saying what's better. Well,
I know what you're going to say.
It's a bit vulgar, but read the article. Why don't you
know
read
what
people?
You're gonna say, and he's taking two negative connotations to argue against greatness.
No, no, not at all.
Okay.
No.
Like what? I don't know. Anyway, I digress. We've run up on a lot of time. Do you have any more rapid fire questions you want to plow through first?
Rapid fire. Okay, man. Well, okay, long time commenter really wants us to answer this, so let's go for it real quick.
Tristan Gordet, MMA fighting with YouTube comments with now 13 finishes, 7 TKOs, and 6 submissions. What do you think of Shakhrat Rakhmonov's UFC debut against Alex Oliveira? Was not expecting a Shakhrat Rakhmonov conversation from Kazakhstan. Came and got a big dub the same week Borat 2 came out. So we were all in the media room talking like, who's going to ask about Borat? Who's going to ask about Borat? I'm like, no one asked about Borat. I don't want this conversation. I don't want that press conference to turn into that conversation.
Is their official motto? Is their official tourism motto now?
Oh, I heard. Awesome win. His hat is made of a legitimate wolf. Awesome. Awesome win. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Good win. Maddox Oliveira apparently had lots of very serious personal issues coming in, family issues coming into that fight. And but yeah, good win for Rakhmonov. And awesome. Can't wait to see him fight again.
There you go. Is that it on questions? Or do we have more?
Yeah, we got one more, just because we got to get this one out of the way.
Watch my 666. Lawler's injured and out of his fight. Perry's calling him out Shamayev. Mike Perry might fight Hazmat. Hamzat.
I know.
Hazmat is what Michael Chiesa keeps calling him.
Yeah.
Mike might fight Hamzat before Leon. Thoughts? Not going to happen. Hamzat Shamayev is going to fight Leon Edwards. Mike Perry can fight. I don't know. I don't really care. Alex, your thoughts?
Seconded. Whatever, Mike Perry. Do whatever you want to do.
I just wish the UFC would, like Dana. I know you didn't hear anything about Mike Perry and the accusations from his ex-wife posted on MMA Junkie, but why don't you look into it? Yeah, why don't? Right, now you have some time. You know, you had a long flight back. You know.
Yeah.
Google it.
Maybe delve into that a little bit.
Yeah.
Google it. Could be fun.
Yeah. I don't know. I have no comment on Mike Perry.
No comment because I don't, you know, no comment. Agreed.
But the line that Jordan Breen said when you're trying to decide who the GOAT is or pound for pound best, it's like saying, what's better, sex when you're high or pizza when you're drunk?
All right. Bang.
Think anyway. About it. Makes you gets
Let
you.
Us know in the comments.
Tell us how you feel. The world needs more Jordan Breen. This MMA world needs more Jordan Breen.
I agree. I like Jordan a lot.
Let's play. Ready to play the outro music?
Okay.
Right. And. Ooh. Take us out.
We are signing off for this edition of the A-Side Live Chat on Wednesday afternoon / morning, depending on where you are in the world. My name is, of course, Jose Youngs. You can find this podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, iHeartRadio, all the podcast networks. Casey's been great on the ones and twos. You can go tweet at him all of your takes if you get into Twitter arguments after this at EKC. It's right there. You brought this upon yourself. He doesn't have a blue check mark, so he can't filter out the noise. Alex Aves is going to be in Las Vegas for the Anderson Silva versus Uriah Hall main event. On the prelims, the co-main event is an absolute banger of a featherweight match between Bryce Mitchell and Andre Feely. Bryce Mitchell gets his camo shorts finally. Andre Feely is probably one of the most outspoken fans of comic books, so I'm very much looking forward to that one. Greg Hardy and the crochet boss, Maurice Green, is on the card. I can't remember all the other fights off card. Low-key, fantastic card for the UFC's return to Las Vegas. So watch for all of Alex's content. What are you going to say?
Okay, we give it up for Reebok. What, like 10 years into, 7 years into this? The last week before the deal is over? Hey, let's make a custom outfit.
Hey,
go get him, Reebok. Go get him.
Well said. Go watch all of our content for UFC 254 and all of our Fight Island content that we have on the YouTube page. The Media Day will stream today, so you can watch that. Watch for Alex's awesome content coming from Las Vegas because she has a way better camera than me, so it's going to look way more aesthetically pleasing. And with that, we'll see you next Wednesday. We're out.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually, we're great, but together, we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's ATLASSIAN.com. Atlassian.